How did you feel about going out on strike?
Well, you didn't know what to expect. We figured that the things that they were fighting for, we needed them. They were fighting for more equal rights for women, which we got. And we got insurance, where the plant paid part of it, hospital insurance. And we got quite a few benefits and a raise. So that it was worth it to me. I know my husband was very much against unions when we went in there. He always, you know, I'd always heard about the unions that they weren't right. But after he saw what the union did for we women, why, he was all for it. Because they really, that's when we got equal rights for the men in the work we did, the price. Paid the same for the same work.
Do you remember the kinds of activity that went on around the strike before it happened? Was there a lot of information given out and that kind of thing?
How do you mean?
Well, I mean, did you understand what the strike was all about when it happened, and what was the union? Was there a lot of union activity?
Oh, yes.
That was real visible?
Yeah, there was a lot of in the noon hours. They would congregate in between the buildings. They had platforms built, you know, and union people would get up and talk what they wanted and the rights, and the only way to get them was to strike. And they wanted better working conditions, better pay, and well, there was quite a bit of that. Of course, the plant, they were satisfied the way it was because they weren't having to pay us so much.
Did you have friends that were more involved in the actual
in the union?
Mm-hmm.
Well, not any close friends, but I knew quite a few that were quite involved in the union. And when they made the offer and the strike was over, we had to go vote with the stadium across the street, you know. We had to attend that and vote. They gave us a big talk and sing and dance, and we voted whether to take it or not. And by that time, everybody was ready to come back to work. After being off 7 weeks, of course, my husband working didn't affect me like some people, you know, that had families. It did them. Of course, a lot of them would come in and they'd get tickets and then they'd get food, things like that. But that's the only strike I remember them having. I know that there were some of them, the supervisors, now came in and worked, did work, just as regular workers. And there's a few, as they call scabs, came in. And after we came back to work, some of those that had come in and worked, I remember one man found his toolbox nailed to the floor. Just little things like that, you know. Another had his tools stolen and or misplaced. And little underhanded things that you didn't see go on. But they picked on those people just because they had come in and worked.
How did you feel about that?
Well, I don't know. I thought if I belonged to the union, I should do what the union wanted me to. But on the other hand, some of those people needed the money quite badly. I could see how they felt about it. So I just let things alone, let it go.
How long did you work at Douglas?
This last time altogether.
This last time?
Well, I went to work in 1951, just for a couple of years. Because my husband hadn't been well, and I thought he'd help out financially. And that was 1951. And I retired in 1966. I kept working. No, in the meantime, I decided to work because I was getting better pay and we needed the money and we bought a house and I needed things for it. And it was just the two of us. So I could. And then my husband was going to retire. He was 3 years older than I was going to retire at 62. But he died very suddenly and I was glad I had a job. So I just kept on working.
What year did he retire? Pardon me, did he?
1961.
Mm-hmm.
So I just kept right on working because it made my Social Security higher, it made my pension higher, and I needed to be away. 8 hours a day I didn't have to think. And it was a good thing I did. It was the best thing for me. Because this death was quite sudden. I just came home from work and found him dead. And that's quite a shock. When he was perfectly well in the morning. Mm-hmm. So I worked as long as they'd let me. I could retire at 62 or 65 or 68 if you could do the work. And the job I was doing, I was about the only one that did it. Anyone could learn as far as that's concerned. But I was doing it and doing it okay, so they let me work till 68. So that's how long I worked. Then I didn't want to retire, but I had to. And I worried so before I quit work, what on earth was I going to do with my time? Just couldn't figure that. Because I'd been there at 4 o'clock every morning, you know. Days aren't long enough. I filled it up all right.
What job were you doing when you quit work?
I was making doors for the DC-9. I would go to the stock room, get my blueprint, I'd pull my parts, come back to my bench, I'd put them together, and I was running, operating a big riveting machine where the whole thing, you'd put your rivets in and you put a seal on the bottom to hold them in place, and you just run them all through the machine. I operated big saws and drill presses. I learned how to operate all those, that big machinery that was there.
Was it heavy work?
Not too heavy. You had trucks, as they call them, that haul things on. And this Vetter machine, why, this big long piece of his rollers that went out, you put it up there and it just fed on through after you got it all ready. And, no, we weren't supposed to lift too heavy a thing, but I did now and then. But it wasn't really heavy work like in some places. Some of where they made the frames where the men worked, the women too did, made the frames where they had to lift them and put them in the jigs and drill through them. That was heavy work. And I have done some of that, but not too much.
You said you worked in almost every department or every building before you retired.
Except the machinery building.
Tell me the different jobs that you had.
I was transferred from the C-124. And I went over to, by that time they built the buildings across the street. And I had bench work. We fixed, I had a little riveting things that went up, like boxes we riveted that went in the plane. Also, worked in the electrical department. What we did was each airline, we'd have to go through the book, each airline, when they fitted out the cockpit where the pilot was with all the electrical work, had their own design, the way the layout was. And we had to put the conduits in and rivet things that the wires went through, but they had to be at a certain place with certain planes, and we had to get that blueprint and work whichever airline was getting that plane. And there was about, 12 or 15 different ones. There'd be so many planes that this would go through for United. Well, they'd have a certain one. Or Air California would have one. Or TSA would have one. And maybe they're for overseas. And that would be a different one. We had to wire them, getting ready for the wires, for the electricians. We had to put all that in the right place. And that was quite interesting. And then, I guess what I got onto this, making these doors, which when they ended up, they were, great big long things and kind of curved, just like the door of the airplane, you know. But, let me think what we made when I was in building 4. I think it was some little thing that went on in the plane.
And did you request these changes of jobs, or
no,
did they just transfer
you?
No,
they just transferred you. As they phased out the 154, then you were put on the DC-9. And if they had too many in one department, they'd switch you to another department, and then you'd get a new job. Just whatever they put you at. And about 1960, something like that, they started having to hire black people whether they knew anything or not, and you couldn't wear them. And I know that I got one black boy to train. He was a teenager. And he wasn't wanting to do the things the way I told him to do them. And in that deal, you had to do things in a certain routine. You did this, and then the next one fitted into that. If you did the next one first, that wouldn't fit. They had to be in a certain routine to make them go together. Well, he couldn't seem to understand that. But I was responsible for his work. And I had to sit down on him two or three times, which he didn't like at all. He was kind of this arrogant afro haircut, you know, guys. But you know, he got so he liked me. And before he left, he got some plexiglass someplace, and he made me the prettiest dagger you ever saw and gave it to me. I still got it somewhere. He filed it down, you know, and it's sharp. It's really a weapon. But when they couldn't fire them, if they possibly wouldn't ever learn it, or sometimes they were just arrogant and wouldn't learn, then they just transferred them to the department. And they just was all around the plant. You didn't dare fire them, but they just kept transferring them.
Were there problems during that time, racial problems?
There was beginning to be, yes. I don't know if there's any right in the plant, but there was outside. And I know they were having quite a bit of trouble in San Francisco about that time. And this young fellow, ever so often, it had to take a long weekend off to go to San Francisco. Well, at that time, I didn't really know what was going on, but afterwards, I knew. He was up there taking part in some of those, I don't know what you would call them. This sort of rebellion, you know, like in where the hippies were and all that, you know. But at that time I didn't realize that was what he was doing. But I know now it was. So it was beginning to come to the top then.
There were no incidences that you remember within the plant, on the job?
No. Nothing like that I ever knew of.
During this time, while you were working, I'm wondering if you brought your mechanical skills home, and if you did things around the house, then using the skills that you learned.
Oh, sure. I've got an electric drill motor here that I've got, that I got for Christmas one time. I want to put a nail in these walls. I get my little motor out, my little tiny drill, and go through there. And I learned a little elementary electrical work. Yeah, I could do things like that, still do. I learned a lot that way.
How did that make you feel?
Well, it had to be done. As long as I had a husband around to do it for me, that was fine. But when I didn't, why, you put in your head to do things yourself. Or hire somebody. And if you could do them, why not?
Have you ever helped other people?
How
you with your other women friends, maybe, that needed help doing something? And
not especially. They just never seemed to need it, I guess.
Did you keep your toolbox?
Oh, yes. I got that. I had eventually bought a rollaway. Do you know what that is?
No.
Well, it's quite a small cabinet on wheels. The door is open, and it's got some shelves in. Mm-hmm. That you put your tools and I've got that out in the shed there with a lot of tools. I've got so much stuff piled on top now that I can't get back to it. But I still got that. And one year we had to work out, we called it the Midway. They brought a lot of old C-124s and B-17s in that needed, they had fatigued metal and needed to be replaced. And we worked out there on those in the summertime, and that's when I was working swing then too, because I'd get in go about 4 o'clock. It was cooler, but it was hot in those places. And we were replacing metal over the part that housed the motor, and I couldn't get work on top, afraid of heights. And anyhow, whoever sat on top had to straddle it. My legs weren't wide enough to straddle it coming down here, but I worked underneath and shot the rivets from underneath, and I usually worked for the man, and he was on top, and he put the rivets from out there. We had to replace all that metal. That's why these planes have been coming, having accidents, these C-10s. You know that they...
The DC-10s?
They have had fatigue metal that airplane companies have not been replaced. They haven't had the right kind of maintenance. I know what's wrong with them. And fatigue metal need to be replaced. Because it gets after so much stress, why, it breaks. Because I know we had to do a lot of that on those old planes. And I'm pretty sure that's what happened to some of them. I wouldn't want that quoted, but then that's, I'm pretty sure that had a lot to do with it.
During this time, you said before that you felt when you started to work that you then had more right maybe to talk, be part of the decision-making process in the family, and that, you know, that maybe could be more shared. I'm wondering if that was, if that carried over after the war. And
oh, sure.
As long as you were working with that.
Sure. Mm-hmm. We had pretty much a 50-50 working relationship.
I'd like to go back now and ask you about your feelings around the time that your husband died, about being alone and you know, being a widow, and that what your life was going to be like.
Well, it changed entirely. You're a widow, you're alone. And all your married friends are nice to you, but pretty soon they don't see much of you. And you've got to build a new life for yourself. And it's just up to you. Nobody can bring you out of it. But I was so thankful I had a job. But it was such a shock that for the first month afterwards, I just went through motions like a zombie. It didn't seem like it was happening to me. It was happening to somebody else, and I was standing off watching it. And then all of a sudden it hit me, and I had a pretty rough time for a while. It was really a shock. But you get over those things. You have to.
Did you take time off from work?
1 week. So. Because I found out that I couldn't stand it at home. I had to get back to work. And the union was so good to me. They came to me and asked me if I needed any assistance of any kind, money or otherwise, which I didn't write them, why they would be glad to help. And I thought that was real nice.
What about your co-workers? Did you feel a lot of support from the people
they were,
at work?
They were real nice to me when I went back. They were a little surprised I went back to work so soon, but I think they understood. No, they were a real nice bunch of people, and I worked with them for several years, the same bunch, you know. I had the same lead lady and just the same bunch of women. They were mostly women. There were some few men in the department, but they were mostly women. She's the one that, that one right there that was my lead at the last.
Did you begin to think about, or when did you begin to think about getting involved in different kinds of activities?
After I quit work. Then I joined the senior citizens, and I began to go on trips. I took one long trip, 5 weeks, and we went through the West and through Canada and Quebec, and then we went to Nova Scotia and Prince Edward Island, down the coast, New York, Boston, New York, and Washington, D.C. Nixon was in, and we met Nixon because we were from Whittier. In the Oval Office, we got a special tour of their quarters, not just the regular ones. And there's some things here I did want to show you. It was on TV. This is where Mrs. Nixon greeted us in their
special
quarters. And we were taken in. We had brunch served to us. And she is the sweetest thing, really. And, of course, Arlene, this appeared in the AARP News Bulletin. I happened to be right in the front line. I was at the back of the ones that they went into the office, and they filled in the back and around, and this was our tour guide. And I just happened to be right by her, and was right in the middle.
You got on all the pictures.
I got in all the pictures. And this was what was in the Progress Bulletin, October 3rd, 1973.
Is this Claremont's paper?
No,
the Whittier paper?
No, it's Pomona paper.
Pomona paper.
Mm-hmm.
That's wonderful.
And Arlene took these off of the TV all evening. She took pictures from the TV.
Look at that.
Now this woman is a retired nurse, and she took care of President Nixon's mother.
Oh, really?
When his youngest brother was born. He was just like gossiping over the back fence with you. No politics. He was just greeting old-time friends from Whittier.
And this was a...
this was on TV.
Was this on the news? Or
yeah,
this was a program?
This was, on the news. And it was repeated several times during the evening. And see, Oval Office in the White House.
Mm-hmm.
And I only took those pictures off of the TV. And I guess that caused quite a sensation.
I guess so. Look at all this.
Well, and here's something, too, that I got for designing a little template to help me with my work.
That was suggestion award.
Uh-huh. I got $15 for it. And this is the apartment when it came out in that plane, not when it was ready to fly. Mm-hmm. The people that worked on it. Out there in the building.
This is during the 50s.
13, yeah. This is during the latter part of the 50s, I think. Mm-hmm. You see, I weighed an awful lot more than I do now.
A lot of older women in this picture.
Oh, yes. They were all, most of them were older women that were working.
Had these women worked during the war, too?
I imagine a good part of them had. Some of them hadn't, but a good part of them had.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that's about all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, I took trips with the senior citizens. And then I came up here. I got interested in the senior citizens' participation in the meals. And here's the awards I've gotten in two different years and volunteer work.
Now this is the program that you're involved with now?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I work 2 days a week over there. Now at that time I was working almost 4 days a week.
Will you describe it for me again on the tape? I know what you're doing, but so that we can have it on tape.
Well, we serve meals. The meals come in. They're caterers. They come in from Claremont Gardens, and we had a big steam table. Wish I had those pictures that I sent up to Peggy. I've got pictures of the whole thing. And then they're served. The people come in, and there's a donation of 75 cents. If there's anyone who can't pay it, they get it free, but there's very few but what can. A lot of the people are just on Social Security, and these meals mean a lot to them. They may be nicely dressed. And they're professors' wives, widows, a lot of them, and ministers' widows, and things like that. And they just barely have enough to get along on. Well, these meals are a godsend to them. Besides, it's they get out, and it's social, too. You know, they have things going on, and they meet other people. That's usually mostly the same group to come week after week. Maybe they don't all come on the same day. Mm-hmm. But then we serve the meals. They have juice and milk. And I serve that. And there's coffee. It's as much coffee as they want is served. And then I help in the kitchen if they need it. Or we have, usually it's meat and one vegetable. Now, the last time I worked, we had sliced turkey, and mashed potatoes, and gravy, and broccoli, and rolls, hot rolls. And I have to put the rolls and the butter on. We have to have paper gloves to do it. We have to wear hair nets, you know, state law. Mm-hmm. And then they have dessert. Besides that, then we have dessert. Sometimes it's pudding, sometimes it's fruit. Sometimes it's, whatever they have. It really is quite a nice lunch. It's more than I can eat, usually. A lot of times I'll bring part of mine home. And, I've got enough, that sliced turkey out there that I couldn't eat the other day and make a turkey sandwich. And a lot of the people do. I don't know, they little cartons of milk. It'll be about a cup, I guess. And a lot of them bring that home. They don't drink milk.
And you said you work 2 days a week there?
I work Monday and Tuesdays now.
And do you go there on other days when you're not working?
Once in a while, I'll go there for my lunch. I took Arlene there for her 60th birthday, and she took pictures all over the place. And I sent most of the better ones up to my daughter up north just to show her what we were doing. It's easy for them or not. Yeah, with a good camera, I guess it is.
Before you got involved with the senior citizens, those years you were still working, what kinds of things would you do to fill your time after work?
I had a house to take care of. And usually I was tired. I was just ready to sit down and rest, watch TV or something. And if I did any shopping or had any alteration in my clothes to do, laundry to do, and ironing. Those were the days where we had to iron things. Just didn't drift dry them. I was always busy. I don't know if we accomplished so much, but when you have a house to take care of, you know, it's different from this little place like this. This I can get by with a lot of things that I couldn't bear.
Did you spend time with friends or with your family?
Well, my family. I didn't have very many close friends in Whittier. Little neighbor next to me. I went down last week to see her. She's 91 now. And she got first she can hardly see. She was my best friend down there. And I used to take her to senior citizens to get her out of the house because she didn't go much. She said she went so I wouldn't have to come home alone. That wasn't the reason I took her, though. That time, I had learned to drive. See, I had to learn to drive after my husband passed away. But, I was probably pretty near a year before I learned to drive. And,
Will you tell me about that?
Well, Arlene's husband made me mad. He said, see, I had the car in the garage there. And he said, you've got that car. Why don't you learn to drive? I said, Don, I'd never get across Whittier Boulevard. I'd have it wrecked. I was so scared of traffic. And he just kind of turned on his heel and walked away. He said, well, you get good and tired of walking, you'll learn to drive. And it made me so furious. I never let on. But that's what it took. So I called up Pico Rivera, the California driving school, and made arrangements. And I took driving lessons every Saturday morning. It was almost 2 months, I guess. I know it cost me over $100 then, and now it's double that then. And for an hour every Saturday, and then I had my freeway lesson one day. It was supposed to be 3 hours, and that was $25. And he came back and it was raining. I said, oh, where are you going today? It's raining. He said, what better time to learn to drive in the rain? So we went clear down to San Clemente, clear down.